On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Historical Society, it is both a state agency and a private membership organization. They have a statutory obligation to collect, house, and make available local government historical records of significance. With their museum steps from the Capitol, they call themselves the state's memory and premier storyteller, and they've had their sights set on a new museum space for decades. Join in on the Wisconsin Historical Society, 800-642-1234. Christian Overland is director of the Wisconsin Historical Society. Christian, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Great to hear from you.
Good morning. So after decades of will, this new museum is taking shape. Can you give us a status update on what the situation is now on a new museum?
Sure. In December, we launched some internal teams because we hired Ralph Applebaum and Associates as the museum's design team to actually do the exhibitions. And they have done things from the Smithsonian Museums to the First People's Museum in Oklahoma. And we're very happy about them. They're a world-class team. And then we've started interviewing architects and engineers. And we just chose one recently. The Smith Group, again from Washington, D.C., as well as Continuum, who's in our own backyard in Wisconsin, too. And Continuum worked on the Chazen Museum as well.
Okay, so it sounds like those outside contractors are taking shape and you're starting to work with them. Why do you feel like the Wisconsin Historical Society needs a new museum?
Well, we have an incredible story to tell. You know, in thinking about sharing our objects, stories, and lives with the residents of the state of Wisconsin and our region. And here's why. Wisconsin Historical Society is unique compared to other state agencies because we have a national history collection. So we're going to tell the story of Wisconsin in the context of the story of North America. And that's going to be a fantastic experience. We have artifacts that just have not been on exhibit before, ever. And some of the photographs and archives that we have too are nationally known by scholars as well as the objects we have. So we think it's very exciting because we're going to create an American History Center right here in Wisconsin, a State History Center right here in Wisconsin, and we're also going to be operating it in a new way in a post-pandemic museum framework. And what that means is community engagement, new storytelling, co-creating with our communities across Wisconsin as well.
What has been your holdings? What has not been on exhibit ever? Can you give us a for instance?
Sure. So we have, going back to our beginnings in 1846, you know, we were founded as a membership organization in the territory before the state of Wisconsin. So things like a letter from Thomas Jefferson to George Rogers Clark, talking about or his idea of going out west on an expedition. Okay. 20-some years later, when Jefferson's president, he sends Clark's younger brother with Meriwether Lewis, and that's the Lewis and Clark expedition. Hmm. We have actually a diary from that exhibition. We have Daniel Boone's manuscripts. We have one of the oldest surviving maps in the world that shows North America on it from 1513. So I can go on and on and on. Those are great objects. And the other thing too, you know, when you do a project like this, you recover objects that, you know, the organization knows that they have, but maybe it's their time to tell the story. So for instance, we have the first electric dynamo from Menlo Park, New Jersey. Thomas Jefferson used that dynamo to test and publicly demonstrate his electrification light bulb system. Hmm. And it's here in Wisconsin. It's a true piece of the cross, if you will, of American scientific history.
We're talking with Christian Overland, director of the Wisconsin Historical Society. He's been in that role since 2018. You can join in 800-642-1234. Let's talk money for the construction of the museum. I mean, we had heard estimates of $100 million, $120 million. Then, you know, the state required a match that was set back in 2018 of $30 million to release the state $70 million. Can you give us can you put these numbers together for us?
Absolutely. So to make it real simple, The building itself, which is going to be over 100,000 square feet, right across the street from the Capitol on Capitol Square, is with exhibits and the building, is going to be $100 million. Okay. And so when we open that up, that's the kind of capital investment for that. We're also raising money for an endowment, $15 million for an endowment to operate the museum, to help operate it for the future and help future stewards, you know, after this team is long gone in the decades, to operate the future museum. The other thing is transition costs. So $5 million of transition costs that help us do things like move the collection to the State Archival Preservation Facility, care for the collection, as well as doing some things around the state, like still operating, because we don't want to stop our service to all of our residents in the state. So we're actually doing something that's a pop-up exhibits around the state and pop-up programs too, to keep everything going.
And that's interesting you say about the transition and the future of the museum work. I'm wondering if a new museum requires additional resources for, everything from curatorial to upkeep, things that we may not as museum goers think about.
That's absolutely true, Kate. So this museum is more than double the size. It's close to triple the size. And right now, about 22,000 school groups can get through a year and visit the Capitol too. And just to give you an idea about the size and scope change, we actually book the Capitol tours. So if 20,000 kids come through our museum, there's actually 76,000 that go through the state. So there's, a lot of kids that can't just go through our museum. So building it in that size is what we need to do. The other piece about it too is that when you build something that big, there's more exhibits going in. We're going to have close to a 10,000 square foot traveling and changing gallery to bring in exhibits, as well as doing temporary ones. So yes, there's more resources that we have there too. So an endowment is important to offset those resources.
And, here we're talking in the State Capitol report, there was a moment when the state moved the preferred site to a full block, the site of a massive 1950s office building, with the intention of including a new veterans museum. What was that thinking about a different location?
Well, the thinking was, is could we actually build something where we are today? And there was a idea of that we could do it if we combined ourselves with a public-private partnership, but we moved from that because we wanted to actually build a freestanding museum. And we started looking around Capitol Square, and that state office building, which is called Jeff One, was one of the options that we were working with the department administration. And along with the Veterans Museum, Wisconsin's Veteran Museum, they're doing something for the future too. So there was an idea, could we combine it together? So from the generosity of donor next to us, we've known a long time, we're living next to the museum, a couple office buildings he sold to us. And we were able to build right where we are today, expand the footprint, and then have a freestanding museum for all the residents of Wisconsin.
Okay, and so before we tie a bow on this, you've selected the architecture and engineering firm. When can we start to see construction begin?
So I think the way to think about this one is it's going to take us about a year to kind of get the engineering and architecture done. So when we get into 2023, we'll probably at the summertime start showing different elevations of what's going on, if not sooner in 23. And then construction, we're on schedule to actually start in January of 24 to demolish the current building and the other buildings.
Okay. Christian Overland leads the Wisconsin Historical Society as we discuss how to preserve records, history, what should be on display and why. Much earlier in the pandemic, its staffers pivoted when museums closed and they had a role in supporting public health and workforce development. We'll ask about that. More to discuss about the State Register of Historic Places and records management of state materials. Your questions as well, 800-642-1234. Back for more State Cap in a moment with Christian Overland here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report as we talk about the work of the Wisconsin Historical Society. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Register, it is Wisconsin's official list of state properties determined to be significant to our state's heritage. Established in 1989, mirrors the National Register, and in Wisconsin includes roughly 2,600 sites at the moment. Join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Wisconsin Historical Society Director Christian Overland stays with us for about 10 more minutes. Moving on to the State Register, can you explain how properties get nominated, how they get added to the State Register?
Oh, sure, Kate. There's actually two pathways to do that, to get your property, which could be a cultural place, it could be architecture, it could be a cultural landscape, to do that. One, our team, the State Historic Preservation Office, may approach you and say, this is really important, and they would want to, you know, start that process. Or two, you could go to our website and via submission of a preliminary National Register questionnaire, they would actually review the questionnaire, the State Historic Preservation Office, and get back to you. So one is we would nominate as well as the public can. So wherever you are in Wisconsin, if you think you have a property or you know of a property that you really want to work on to make sure that it gets recognized on the state and or national registry, because the State Historic Preservation Office does that as well, we're the one place stop shopping you can do that. Just go to our website, wisconsinhistory.org, and you can connect to that.
Are there official plaques? How do you identify that a building is cared for under the state's official register?
So it's once there's an eligibility that happens, and that's really kind of, you know, does it have historical significance on the state level first to be recognized as to be on the listing of state registered places? We actually reach out and work with people in terms of having them go through a series of kind of map identification, location, researching the history, photography as well too. And it's a long process, but once you get on a national and the state register, and still talking about the state of Wisconsin register, it's actually a very satisfying process too. I'm very proud of our State Historic Preservation Office because they're not only just about compliance and how you can actually do these things, you know, through a series of steps, but we also have webinars and educational opportunities and a well-informed staff that loves to talk to the public about it.
So how does the state work with local governments, local individuals to preserve a building that could be subject to demolition?
So in terms of what happens with that is, you know, we work with certified local governments. And what I mean by certified local government, that means, you know, like if you're living in a town that has a historic district or you put together a historic district commission, we work with you to set that up. And then that becomes a local law and criteria issue that if it's going to be damaged or if there's an impingement from construction or something like that, that happens on that level. We provide resources through the register for people to understand that. And then also if people are concerned about their buildings being demolished, I would say the first thing to do is put them on the registry. It doesn't prevent everything in the future from that happening, but what it does do is it educates the public about the importance of the structure.
I've noticed that the number of historic properties on the Wisconsin Register is going down. I think it was near 3,000 some years ago. Now we're at about 2,600. Why would it be going down?
So there's a process of delisting too. There's changes that happen. Like you said, sometimes there's a demolition that happens. Sometimes it's a city growth. Sometimes there's impingement. But when that happens, the State Historic Preservation Office actually mediates that process and documents that process. So the history is not long gone forever. It's actually held in the state archive through the State Historic Preservation Office.
Circling back for a moment with the museum, will there be any teardown of a historic building to build the new museum?
There's actually two structures next to us that are from the late or from the early 20th century. And yes, those are contributing structures that are going to be for the museum. And as far as the museum too, well, in terms of its educational outreach as well, One of the things is that when we think about why it's important to build next to the state capitol, going back to having the children coming in, the students from all over the state to visit the state capitol, but also this is more than a bricks and mortar project. We're also reaching out to all 72 counties digitally to connect them as well. So what we hope to have is people telling their history across the state. So if you're, say, in Bayfield County and you wanted to share your history through this network, you could do so through the new museum in Wisconsin.
So you see, like, a new museum construction would be more important to our future than it would be to hold on to some much older buildings. Is that what I'm hearing?
So I would look at it this way in terms of, like, our value proposition for history across the state and education. We look at it in terms of, we're going to tell the story of those two buildings. We're going to tell the story of the landscape around the state capitol, the changes of the land around the state capitol too, because there's been a lot of change. And as the State Historic Preservation Office, we want to keep educating people about that change. But in terms of our educational mission and connecting to people around the state and giving people an opportunity to do that and moving out these artifacts that that are national, and so people can understand their history in a national context, yeah, I think that's what we're looking at. It's not looking at it as like we want to tear these buildings down, but this is actually the perfect place to build the museum for the next 150 years.
Talking with Christian Overland, director of the Wisconsin Historical Society, as we discuss the society's work in preservation around the state, its role in state government. With your questions, 800-642-1234. So, Christian, by state law, the Historical Society is required to collect, maintain, and make available local government records of significance. Can you explain what might be in your holdings that fall into that category?
Sure. So as the state archive, and we have a state archivist too on the staff, what they do is they have a whole department that starts to archive from state records to county records too. And so to give you an idea of the 1918 pandemic that happened, we actually have the public health records in terms of like how those commissions got set up. And so we were able to kind of look at that immediately and let the state know that this is how the 1918 pandemic was dealt with as far as health commissions. And it went down to the town and city level at that point in time. That is really significant because we were able to use that and give that information to the Department of Health Services too. So that's a really important part, as well as other elements of county history. And we have archivists that work with all the counties. The only one county that is not in the state archive, and that's Milwaukee County. They have their own museum, Milwaukee County Historical Society, that works with the county of Milwaukee that preserves their collections.
Some things I didn't realize that were there would be like land deeds, divorce case records, court case filings. When do governments turn or local government turn over or local courts turn over their records to you? How does that work?
So there's a retention process. Great question, Kate. And there's varied levels of it. So what it is, there's standards that our archivists, you know, walk out and, you know, talk to the counties, talk to them on phone calls, meet with commissions in different counties too, and talk about the retention of records and how they move through the process. Sometimes it takes years. Sometimes it takes maybe a decade or 5 years, depending on what it is. But to your point about local history, one of the things that's become more important to people is genealogy. Mm-hmm. And what we have is we have all the state licenses for everything. So a barbershop license, a cosmetology license, a steam boiler license. And so we have a partnership with Ancestry.com too, where we're starting to move some of these things, you know, out there to make them more digitally available as well. So that's another important thing, is that people can actually find their family stories through our collections as well too, and find out, you know, their pathway from the past of how they got here today.
And very quickly, we're about out of time. How would a person access these files?
The genealogical collections and other files? Mm-hmm. You can actually, a couple of ways. One is digitally, you can connect with our archivists and you can send a note with them, and they can let you know what we have online. You can look online right away too. There's a genealogical section online as well. And we have genealogical archivists that are just devoted to that. And also we have webinars where people can actually participate, and they're specific for different communities as well. And you can all come down. Everybody has the opportunity to visit the state Historical Society State headquarters, where we have the actual library and archive room where you can sit there and just, you know, ask
pour
to
over
see
it.
You want.
Yes. Yeah. Christian, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. Have a terrific day.
You too. Christian Overland, director of the Wisconsin Historical Society. Ahead this hour, the State Capitol Report continues with the top economic development official, WEDC Secretary Missy Hughes, joins us. Back for more State Cap after a news update on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Wisconsin's head of economic development, Missy Hughes, is here. As our state's unemployment rate dropped to 2.8% in March, new record low. The latest from the Bureau of Labor Statistics says Wisconsin is one of a dozen states reaching record low jobless rates. So what does that mean for our job climate and what it's like to do business here? 800-642-1234 to join in. Missy Hughes is Secretary and CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, or WEDC. Secretary Hughes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Well, let's start there with unemployment at a record low. The state job portal listing about 136,000 open positions at the moment. How are companies filling these jobs?
Well, so what we're seeing in Wisconsin is folks are back to work. We have one thing I want to focus on is the labor participation rate. That's the number of people who are working. And in Wisconsin, we have 66% of our folks are working. That's right about as top as we can go. And it's 4 percentage points higher than the national rate. So what we're seeing is our, you know, numbers are back, we're back at work, but yet our businesses are still looking for people. And so our businesses are really being creative about how to attract workers, how to make sure that they're satisfied, they're flexible, they've got what they need to show up at work every day. And on the economic development side of things, we're making sure that we're trying to remove obstacles as much as possible, whether it's childcare or transportation, statewide and government-wide. We're looking at everything we can do to make sure that people can get to work.
Getting to work is one thing, but, you know, what being paid is another. I mean, you know, you look at our minimum wage set at $7.25 an hour, been that way since 08. What would you tell state lawmakers about real wage growth, you know, in these times of inflation for the lowest paid people in Wisconsin, and as businesses are struggling to fill those lower rung positions?
Well, we're continuing to see wages increase for the first time in 30 years. And so while that's encouraging, we are still lagging behind what we're seeing as far as inflation. And where businesses are doing everything they can to make sure that their hourly rates are meeting the market, we also need to be doing what we can, and this is what I would say to the lawmakers, to help with those kind of infrastructure pieces that make sure that someone can be working fully, whether it's broadband or, again, transportation, those places where government traditionally can help make sure the workforce is strong and able to show up.
It's not about the wage itself, is what I'm hearing.
No, I mean, wages are incredibly important, and that's what the businesses can bring to the table. And what I'm saying is, you know, government has a role of bringing the other pieces of the puzzle to the table.
What does maximum employment then look like for Wisconsin? Is Wisconsin at full employment, or do you expect the jobless rate to fall further?
I think that we're starting to really hit the top level of employment in Wisconsin. And so at WEDC, what we're thinking about is how can we help our businesses do things like create more productivity and more efficiency? That might be through automation. It might be through other process improvements. And so how can we support them in doing that? You know, anytime I talk to a business that has increased their productivity through robots or other really, you know, modernizing efforts, they keep all their employees are safer and have higher skilled jobs.
So when you see, I would perhaps think that that is one area of creativity, but what else are businesses doing to fill these jobs when we see still the help wanted signs up and down organizations?
it's a really competitive environment for workforce right now. You know, we talk about supply chain and the challenges with supply chain. Workforce is probably the biggest supply chain challenge right now. So, you know, businesses are just continuing to be as creative as they can be and think about, you know, what are the other ways we can attract workers to Wisconsin? One of those pieces is immigration. And the reality is, you know, a lot of population in Wisconsin for, you know, 200 years has occurred through immigration. And so we need to be thinking about not only as a state, but as a country, how do we solve some of our kind of our juggernaut on immigration so that we can start to increase and you know, face some of these demographic challenges.
I would imagine their seasonal workers, too, would be in that mix to help with farm labor.
Yeah, both with farm labor and with tourism, we've seen some challenges around not being able to have our traditional folks come into the country to help us with that. And so we're starting to see some resolution about that. A lot of the embassies around the world shut down during the pandemic, and that's where critical seasonal workers, especially for tourism, come from. So we're starting to see some relief on that.
Before we move on, will that be different for the Dells this summer as tourism really starts to pick up? But we also see recent COVID lockdowns in China.
Well, you know, I think the Dells will finally get to see some relief. And, you know, as we work towards full employment and making sure that we have those seasonal employees, you know, we don't want to fall back into another situation of the pandemic. And so all fingers crossed and, you know, continuing to do what we should be doing to be smart to make sure that we can continue on a path towards recovery.
Talking with Missy Hughes, Secretary and CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, WEDC, as we get an update on economic development initiatives, the outlook for businesses and efforts to support new business growth around the state. Your questions as well in the mix, 800-642-1234. Let's look at the onslaught of grants now. The state's Main Street Bounce Back Program distributed around $34 million in grants to thousands of businesses. What has been the impact of this program?
Yeah, the Main Street Bounce Back Program is encouraging new businesses in vacant spaces all around the state. So in 72 counties, we have been able to help new businesses start or find their spot on Main Street or another community corridor. And what we're seeing is just incredible. So far, we've got 3,700 new businesses that have started around the state. And that's really about supporting the businesses that survived during the pandemic. You can imagine if you're a small business and you've got empty storefronts on either side, it's hard to keep going. And so what we're doing is filling up our main streets and our commercial corridors so that folks will stop, they'll get out, they'll walk around, shop and eat, and really support our communities.
Do you have some numbers there? How much vacant real estate is there on Wisconsin main streets?
Well, I can tell you that as a result of this program, this grant program, we've got economic developers and chambers all around the state saying they're running out of vacant spots and they're almost frustrated because they want to have more opportunities to take advantage of these grants. So we're really actually seeing creative use of spaces and we're seeing these spaces get filled up.
So when you look at what businesses qualify for the Bounce Back Program, how can a small business or a startup know if they qualify for these funds?
Well, we've tried to make it as straightforward as possible. And every business that I've talked to that's received the Bounce Back Grant has been amazed at how streamlined for government the process is. And so we're excited about that. A business, if they're interested, we still have grants available and can go to our website at wedc.org and understand what the parameters are for applying and getting the grant. But there's still grants available.
And these grants are not ones that the business has to pay back?
That's correct. This is a grant and it is free for the business to decide whether they use it for payroll or inventory. And it is a grant, not a loan, so it doesn't have to be paid back.
Let's look at the diverse business grants. Governor Evers awarding more than $86 million in diverse business assistance grants late last month. This is something that I know you have been really focused on. What can you tell us there about how these dollars will be used?
Well, the governor, as you say, dedicated, you know, tens of millions of dollars to help diverse businesses. And what's really critical about this is it's going to organizations that have been working for decades to help diverse businesses, whether it's the African American Chamber of Commerce, the Hmong Chamber of Commerce, or the LGBTQ Chamber of Commerce. And these groups are going to set up things like revolving loan funds so that these monies will keep helping these communities and these businesses for years and years to come. And they've been operating on shoestrings. So it's really exciting for them to have the resources to deploy in their communities.
So what does success look like for after these grants have been issued, after these grants are exhausted? How does that change the economic landscape here in Wisconsin?
Well, one of the things that we really looked at in making these grants is their sustainability and how can they, you know, not just be a once in a generation moment, how can they continue? So in awarding the grants, many of them were awarded for funds that will keep rotating through the communities and the economies and thereby have a lasting impact rather than just a one-time piece.
What does that mean, keep rotating through the communities?
If you have a loan that you make to a business, that business can use those dollars for 3 or 4 years and then pays them back at a low interest rate, and then they can get loaned back out again. So it creates a cycle of funding rather than a grant, which is just a one-time payment and doesn't come back into the organization.
These diverse chambers of commerce, they, what I would imagine, still continue to need these funds to help bring these programs to their clients, to their businesses. How do you continue to ensure that they can provide those programs over the long run?
Well, WEDC has supported these organizations with continuous funding for a number of years, and they'll be able to take our funding and then some of this federal funding and use that to really strengthen their own systems. And that's really critical because you want to have someone within the community that's a trusted source that, you know, is able to provide the services that are needed and then the capital that's needed. So this will create really a much more comprehensive system for these diverse businesses to access.
We've been talking with some of these chambers and they say, look, access to capital, getting banks to loan money has been a huge, huge barrier. What is happening to on the side of banks here?
Well, I think that banks are beginning to see that there is an opportunity to serve diverse businesses in a much stronger way. And the banks are looking at their processes to understand where are we putting up obstacles to diverse businesses. You know, in the past, and unfortunately even today, if a diverse business walks into the bank, sometimes they have to be, you know, a star child and 150% of what a non-diverse business needs to be as far as checking all the boxes. And so banks are looking and saying, maybe we've put too many obstacles in the way and we need to be looking at these diverse businesses as real opportunities for growth. A diverse business often doesn't have more than one employee. So that means there's opportunity to grow. And how can we support those businesses in bringing on more employees and growing even further?
Wisconsin's head of economic development, Missy Hughes, with us on economic growth, job creation, as Wisconsin's unemployment rate dips to a record low, seen in other states as well. Still time to talk about doing business here, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Secretary Missy Hughes here on the Ideas Network. We're taking stock of business and industry on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. How is your business doing in attracting international clients? Are supply chain issues causing headaches as Wisconsin companies look for new markets abroad? The geopolitics and Russia's war in Ukraine, they have an impact. The WEDC, Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, says our state's exports to Russia last year totaled around $109 million, ranking 35th. In top export markets. To talk, it's 800-642-1234. WEDC Secretary Missy Hughes with us for about nine more minutes. So as the war in Ukraine began to unfold, you were in Germany and Austria meeting with business leaders there with connections to Wisconsin. What are your biggest top line takeaways on trade in Wisconsin?
Yeah, we were in Germany and Austria just a few days after the war in Ukraine had broken out. And what was really impactful to understand is, if you're in Germany, the distance to the war is about the same as the width of Wisconsin. So it's very close, and it was very, important to talk about it with folks and to understand what they were feeling. The whole Ukrainian war adds a volatility that our businesses don't need at this point. After 2 years worth of pandemic and, as we're seeing the economy still be volatile, the war doesn't help things. But the biggest takeaway was sitting in rooms and talking with businesses or government officials and realizing that having the relationships that economic development can provide, that business relationships provide, is critically important as we continue through the different times that we've been in and through different administrations. Those kind of relationships last. And it's just really important to remember that, we've got friends across the pond.
You have a number of programs like the Wisconsin Global Navigation Network. How are you helping Wisconsin businesses find markets in other countries?
Well, our businesses in Wisconsin largely export our goods, whether it's to other parts of the United States or to Europe and all around the world. So we make things that go into other things and components. So what we do at WEDC is help our businesses think about, okay, are there businesses in Germany that might be able to use our parts that maybe aren't able to access their parts because of disruptions in Ukraine or disruptions in China? And so we help our businesses understand the opportunities and then really dive in and help them create meetings and, understand the culture of business in a different country and really help them break through into that marketplace.
What are you seeing there by way of Wisconsin manufacturers bringing production back to U.S. plants from China or elsewhere in the world?
What we're really seeing is Wisconsin businesses take the opportunity to say to someone, hey, I can be a less risky source of supply. So while they're not necessarily completely taking away the Chinese supply chain, they're definitely stepping in and saying, I can diversify, I can help you mitigate some of your risk by locating some of your supply chain here in Wisconsin.
Are you in favor of raising import duties, for instance, from products in China to give these Wisconsin manufacturers a leg up?
I think that if things like tariffs create instability and division, it doesn't help our businesses. Our businesses just need a steady state to be able to then act. And, even if it's a tough, steady state, our businesses know how to compete. But it's when things are, zigging and zagging and upping and downing that it makes it hard for our businesses.
Let's just dip in for a moment on supply chain issues and what you're hearing. I mean, we've got the war in Ukraine causing market disruptions, the government sanctions, lockdowns in China affecting ports. What do you know about the status of supply chain and logistics impacting our Wisconsin businesses?
Well, I know that our businesses are coming into this in a really strong place with a base in agriculture and manufacturing. Wisconsin actually came through the pandemic in a very strong position. And so our businesses are acting from that place of strength. They're investing in inventory. If they know that a supply chain is going to be difficult, they're able to go ahead and pre-purchase some inventory and have it ready for them when they're ready to build. I've seen a number of companies that are being pretty aggressive when it comes to saying, we're going to bring those things in-house so that we can keep assembling our parts and our components.
Talking about Wisconsin's economy with Missy Hughes, Secretary of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, taking your questions at 800-642-1234. Turning to Foxconn-esque, so to speak, I mean, during a special meeting last month, Mount Pleasant officials really expressed hope that they can attract another large company to the largely vacant Foxconn site. what would you say to a community like Mount Pleasant that is wanting to bring that business development in when it didn't materialize?
Well, first I'll say that we are in constant communication with all localities around Wisconsin, but especially Mount Pleasant. And what I would say is the investment that we as a state made in the infrastructure around the Foxconn site, whether it is the power that we brought to the site or the water, presents a real opportunity for bringing in, whether it's a big user or multiple users. And so we are working with Mount Pleasant as they hear things or we hear things to say, okay, how can we help make sure that this site is all that it should be, given the infrastructure that's right there? And, you know, companies that we've talked to and folks that work in this industry of attracting businesses have said that the Mount Pleasant site is really a world-class site, and it's only a matter of time before we really develop that and bring it to its full potential.
How competitive is it out there to attract businesses to industrial parks that are ready for lights on, or business parks? What is the climate like, and how competitive is Wisconsin in this area?
Well, it's important to remember that when a business is making a decision about where to land, they've got multiple considerations, whether it's workforce or access to supply chain, or even, you know, businesses are looking at the climate and what kind of volatility there might be. Are there tornadoes? Are there hurricanes? And so what we do is try to present the site or a site in Wisconsin as, you know, checking the boxes for many of the business's concerns. And then, you know, we at WEDC participate in incentives and trying to bring that business here. But the businesses are making smart decisions, because when you locate someplace, you're going to be there for 50 years. And so it's really critical that it's the right decision for the business.
Have you reevaluated, what those packages, incentive packages look like that Wisconsin gives out in the future? What is the philosophy there?
Well, one of the biggest challenges is that our incentives are often based on job creation.
Mm-hmm.
And if a business is going to create a bunch of jobs, we'll incentivize that. But in a place where we need to be creating better jobs, or we need to be thinking about particular industries, we need to be smarter about our incentives. And so at WEDC, we're working on what else do we want to bring to Wisconsin? Jobs are great. Of course, we want to create jobs, but we also want to do that understanding the current workforce situation that we're in.
Secretary Hughes, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Missy Hughes is Secretary and CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Just ahead, we talk about what's in the air with the outlook on spring allergy season. Do you battle runny nose, watering eyes this time of year? We have the allergist. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.